Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you very much. Do you believe high schools, colleges, and universities should teach ethics? A few years ago, a wealthy businessman gave Harvard University $10 million to establish an ethics course in their school of business. That is a step in the right direction, but it raises a number of questions. What standards should Harvard and other universities honor in teaching students business ethics, or legal ethics, or medical ethics? If business schools strictly observed biblical standards, would the professors and students rebel against such restrictions? Can a person follow absolute moral standards, if such exist, and still be successful in the world of business? There are other questions I shall raise as we continue our discussion of the topic, teaching ethics. When I was teaching in the Bible department at Fried Hardeman University, one of my courses every other year was Christian ethics. Our textbook, Ethics for Daily Living, was a book of lectures I had edited. In this excellent book, there are chapters on sexual ethics, bioethical issues, family ethics, situation ethics, judicial ethics, personal ethics, social ethics, and many other topics relating to ethics. I introduced the volume with a brief excerpt from Richard John Newhouse's outstanding book, The Naked Public Square. Dr. Newhouse tells the story of a preacher who began his Sunday morning prayer by asking, "O Lord, have you read this morning's New York Times?" Page 3. I do not subscribe to the New York Times, but I am an avid newspaper reader. So I shall mention a number of newspaper articles that show beyond question that our schools or somebody should be teaching ethics. But before I review some newspaper articles, I must define the word ethics. Our English word is derived from the Greek ethike, a word that relates to moral conduct. Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary defines the word as follows. It is the discipline dealing with what is good and bad, and with moral duty and obligation. Page 389. Philip E. Hughes's book, Christian Ethics in Secular Society, adds, "Ethics has to do with the way people behave. The concern of ethics or morals is not merely the behavior that is customary in society, but rather the behavior that ought to be customary in society. Ethics is prescriptive, not simply descriptive." Page 11. The Tennessean, Thursday, December the 23rd, 2004, printed an article with the title, "Ex-PTA Chief Accused of Stealing $100,000. The subtitle to the article reads, "Money Included Donations for Former Student Dying of Cancer." The article reveals that stealing from parent-teacher associations has become a common problem throughout the United States. In Knox County, Tennessee, a woman was charged with taking $10,000 from an elementary school PTA. A former president of a PTA in New Jersey was arrested on charges of taking between $20,000 and $30,000 between June 2002 and September 2004. Pages 1A and 2A. The Supreme Court has foolishly ruled that the Ten Commandments may not be posted in our public schools. The members of that august body expressed concern that the children might actually read the commandments and be influenced by them. What a shame it would be if children actually read, "You shall not steal," and remained honest because God wants them to. Would it not be a tragedy if parents and teachers were to read the Ten Commandments and abide by their precepts? Am I arguing that the Ten Commandments posted on the walls of schools in Nashville or in Knoxville or in New Jersey would have prevented theft from the funds of their local PTAs? No, I am not arguing that. But we must have someone to teach our children, young people, and adults that stealing is wrong. Always wrong. Paul urged the Ephesians, "Let him who stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands that which is good, that he may have to give to him who needs." Ephesians 4:28. How can reasonable and decent people object to teaching moral value? Dr. Phil McGraw's new book, Family First, Your Step-by-Step Plan for Creating a Phenomenal Family, observes, "Gone are the days when cheating in school was just some isolated case of some lazy kid copying off the smart kid. Today, over half of the students admit to cheating. Some of the kids are using high-tech electronic pagers during tests and plagiarizing term papers off the Internet." Page 10. "Some of the blame for cheating in high schools and in colleges rests squarely on the shoulders of the teachers. When a teacher is so lazy that he uses the same test year after year, he ought to know that the test will be passed on to the next class." The Tennessean, Sunday, February 29, 2004, printed an article on cheating that it had copied from the Honolulu Advertiser. The article affirmed, "Nearly three-fourths of high school students admit to some form of cheating in the last year." Adrian Allen, a private school headmaster, points to reality television, where cheating is considered part of the winning strategy, and to the pro football player who dropped the ball, but holds it up high to the referee as if to say, "Fair catch." He's expected to do that. The coach will yell at him if he didn't. The article lists some of the high school students' views on cheating. A New Jersey high school senior said, "Cheating is a part of high school." An Ohio high school junior responded, "Do what it takes to succeed in life. We're afraid to fail." A Michigan high school junior said, "Maybe teachers and parents should focus on learning instead of grades." Page 24A. "Our young people must be taught that cheating is stealing and is always immoral. But when they see our political and religious leaders misbehaving, they think they can get by with wrongdoing." While we're thinking about stealing, it is a good time to mention gambling. Gambling is legal stealing, but it is stealing nevertheless. It is taking from others without giving value in return. When our congressmen and other political leaders endorse and legalize any kind of gambling, they're making it profitable for some people to steal. Businesses that promote gambling are telling young people and older ones, "You do not have to engage in honorable work. Just gamble and get rich." In addition, those who promote gambling are contributing to the destruction of American homes and the lives of countless thousands of people. Should not our schools and colleges teach our young people that gambling is immoral? Always immoral. The Tennessean, Sunday, March the 28th, 2004, published an article that asked, "Is gambling addiction a threat?" One of the authors of the study on gambling is Charles F. Armistead, who once served as chairman of the Religious Leaders for a Gambling Free Tennessee and a member of the Gambling Free Tennessee Board. He preaches for the Bethlehem Methodist Church in Franklin, Tennessee. His article in the paper is entitled, "Compulsion to Buy Lottery Tickets Poses a Growing Risk." Mr. Armistead cites some statistics from the state of Georgia, which has had legalized gambling for several years. A Georgia Department of Human Resources study reports that gambling in Georgia in 1995 cost the state $224 million a year. In 1994, Dr. Robert Goodman, director of the United States Gambling Research Institute, discovered that each person addicted to gambling cost society an average of $13,200 a year. Page 20A. Steve Cohen, a Tennessee state senator and the one most responsible for legalizing lottery in our state, argues, "Games like the ones we have in Tennessee are not a problem." Let us say, just for the sake of argument, that lottery gambling is not very addictive, as Steve Cohen argues. Does that mean that playing the lottery is not really a problem? Does Steve Cohen not know that some students will spend their lunch money on gambling, that they will steal from businesses and even from their own parents to play the lottery, and they will advance to other forms of gambling, such as casino gambling and playing poker? It is my considered judgment that Steve Cohen could care less so long as the state receives money from the lottery. There is one other aspect of gambling I have great difficulty understanding. How can business owners who have children have lottery machines in their places of business? Are the parents like Steve Cohen? Do they care if their children become addicted to gambling so long as the parents make money from gambling? The Tennessean, Monday, November 29, 2004, published an article dealing with poker playing among young people. The author of the article, Martha Irvine of Associated Press, quotes Keith White, executive director of the National Council on Problem Gambling, as saying, "It's fun. It's exciting. It's glamorized on TV and in the media in ways that other addictions are not. There's the impression that through skill, you can beat the odds. But randomness is always going to have a bigger factor in determining the outcome than our skill. And unfortunately, it's not the message these kids get." The article in the newspaper lists several warning signs on problem gambling. Often gambled longer than planned. Often gambled until his or her last dollar was gone. Used income or savings to gamble while letting bills go unpaid. Borrowed money to finance gambling. Broken the law or considered breaking the law to finance a gambling habit. Felt depressed or suicidal because of gambling losses. Lost sleep over gambling. Been remorseful over gambling. Gambled to get money to meet financial obligations. Made repeated, unsuccessful attempts to stop gambling. Page 7A. One of the most discouraging and disgusting aspects of many political leaders is the pork barrel they get for their constituents. They sometimes grab as much pork barrel as possible. Many of them use their bargaining power to bring hundreds of millions of dollars to their districts. They know if they are clever enough or unscrupulous enough to get millions of dollars for their supporters, they're likely to be returned to office when another election is held. The sad truth is, it costs all Americans a great portion of their taxes to pay for the pork barrel that goes to various senators and congressmen. Frankly, I do not appreciate our senators and representatives wasting the money of taxpayers. It is an absolute shame and disgrace. We should hold our political leaders accountable for their misuse of our money. The Tennessean, Sunday, December 12, 2004, published an article entitled, "Pork Money Means Different Things to Different Places." The article was written by Bonna de la Cruz, a staff writer for the Tennessean. A few brief excerpts from the article should be enlightening. Tourists have another good reason to flock to downtown Nashville with attractions, such as the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum, and the special programs it puts on. That's the explanation Tennessee's two U.S. senators gave for backing a $250,000 grant to the Country Music Shrine, and was part of the federal spending bill signed by President Bush this past week. But the grant, just one of thousands approved for lawmakers' home districts, drew extra attention last month after landing on a national taxpayer group's top 10 list of egregious projects. Page 17A. The article lists a number of other pork barrel projects. The tax bill for most Americans is much too high. Many families have no choice about the mother's working outside the home, even if she prefers to stay home to rear the children. She has to work in many cases because her husband cannot make enough to keep the family going and to pay the taxes. Should not our senators and congressmen be concerned enough about the welfare of families to do all within their power to reduce the tax burden on families? How can our representatives claim to have our best interests at heart when they grab all the pork they can get? They may argue that they are looking out for their constituents, but they are merely feathering their nest for the long haul. No wonder millions of Americans have so little respect for the political process. Do our politicians know the meaning of the word ethics? Have they ever had a college course on moral values? Do they know the difference between right and wrong? If the citizens of Nashville want to have a country music shrine, they need to find the money in their own budget, not charge the rest of us with their pet projects. Besides, it would make more sense to find the money within the Country Music Association. I do not object to country music. Well, some of it. But I do not want to pay for a country music shrine in Nashville or anywhere else. I want to use my money as I believe the Lord wants me to, not to pay for pork barrel. when state officers, whether policemen or jailers, abuse prisoners or others, should not those officers pay for the damages? It makes absolutely no sense to charge innocent citizens for the inexcusable damage policemen and jailers sometimes do. Rutherford County, Tennessee, had jailed a man for misdemeanor convictions on drug, alcohol, and driving offenses. The Tennessean, Tuesday, December the 21st, 2004, reported that a lawsuit over the prisoner's death had been settled. The prisoner suffered from hepatitis. According to the article in the newspaper, the man repeatedly asked for help while he lay dying from bacterial meningitis. The county has paid the man's mother $750,000 to settle the case. Oddly enough, the county denies any blame for the prisoner's death. Pages 1A and 2A. The case in Rutherford County reminds me of President Clinton's behavior in the Paula Jones case. Paula Jones accused the president of sexual harassment. He denied the charges, but paid almost $800,000 to settle with her. Paying that kind of money is an admission of guilt. If I were charged with a crime, whatever the nature of the crime, and I were not guilty, you can rest assured I would not pay to settle the matter. If it took every cent I own in this world, I would not admit to a crime I had not committed. I repeat, the county officials who were responsible for the prisoner's death should pay out of their own pockets for their malfeasance in office. A man in Nashville has been arrested and charged with placing ads for prostitution in a weekly newspaper, the Nashville Scene. The Nashville police accused the man of placing ads for escort services. The ads included suggestive phrases such as triple X, sex in the city, and $200 per hour. The Tennessean reported that the man faces up to 12 years in prison if convicted. Page 1A. Personally, I favor what the Nashville police are trying to do in curbing prostitution. There is nothing sleazier than prostitution. But when television allows programs such as Sex in the City, should not the producers of those programs be charged with soliciting prostitution? Should they not be tried, convicted, and imprisoned for promoting prostitution and for corrupting the morals of American people? Sports, whether high school, college, or professional, have become too dominant in American society. Our young men and women, whatever the sport, in too many cases are pressured to win, even if it means cheating and lying. To deny that fact means that one is either ignorant or dishonest or blind. Because of the enormous pressures to win at all costs, most of our young men become violent when the game does not progress as the players wish. The Tennessean, Tuesday, November 23, 2004, reported that Clemson University and the University of South Carolina have forfeited bowl bids because of a brawl in a football game. Page 1C. But there should be punishment beyond not being invited to a postseason bowl. The players involved in the fight should be charged with assault and battery. They are guilty of a crime and should be charged with a crime. Grown men, and not just high school or college students, act like bullies and thugs when they're on the basketball court or on the football field. Of course, we expect such behavior from hockey players, but not from basketball or football players. The Tennessean, Thursday, December the 9th, 2004, tells of charges that have been filed against some of the Indiana Pacers and some fans in Pontiac, Michigan. Most of you probably saw, either as the game was being played or on the evening news, the fighting that took place in a professional basketball game. Ron Artest, David Harrison, and Anthony Johnson were charged with one count of assault and battery. Jermaine O'Neal, a three-time NBA All-Star, was charged with two counts of assault and battery. Five fans were charged with misdemeanor assault and battery, including Pistons star Ben Wallace's brother, David. Bryant Jackson also was charged with felony assault and battery for throwing a chair into the fray. Page C1. Ron Artest has been suspended for the rest of the year. But in addition, he ought to be sent to jail. Have any of these basketball players and their fans ever heard of ethics? the Tennessean, Tuesday, November 23, 2004, published an article with the title, Violence in Sports, Reflection of Violent Society, by Joe Biddle, sports columnist for the paper. Biddle asked, this is what it has come to? The NBA players stampede into the stands to punch out paying customers. Beer companies pour big money into professional sports. When liquored up, fans insert themselves into the games. You have Ron Artest charging after them like a wild man. Sports violence has taken its place in a violent society. Page 5C. No one can find justification for such stupidity. My one strong objection to what has occurred is that the NBA commissioner was too lenient on the players. While I was preparing this study of teaching ethics, I discovered a number of pertinent articles in this week's edition of the Tennessean. One front-page article revealed that the woman who stole $100,000 from a Nashville PTA had been convicted of felony bank fraud in 1993 for writing more than $75,000 in bad checks. The back page of the front section of the paper, Thursday, December the 20th, 2004, has an article accusing the Republicans of trying to change the ethics rules. Page 12A. I'm not sure of the implication of the changes Republicans are proposing, but I know this. There is a great need in both houses of Congress and in all other governmental positions for strict ethical rules. When our public servants commit crimes, they should be punished to the full extent of the law. And it is ridiculous to argue that some violators are first-time offenders. The local news section of the Tennessean, Thursday, December the 30th, 2004, printed an article with the heading, Theft Operation Staggering, Police Say. Four people from Portland, Tennessee, my hometown, have been charged with bilking Walmart of $1,500,000. The four suspects and their immediate associates are accused of scamming Walmart out of $1.5 million over 10 years. That doesn't include what they allegedly stole from two other unidentified chains. Page B1. The same edition of the paper also reported that a daycare worker in Laverne, Tennessee, has been arrested on aggravated child abuse and aggravated rape charges. The woman has been accused of molesting a 16-month-old girl under her care. Page B2. The sports section of the paper told of the murder of Quane Doster, a star football player at Vanderbilt University. Doster was visiting his family in Tampa, Florida, his hometown, when he was shot and killed. He was with two friends in a parked car in Ybor City, a crime-ridden section of Tampa. Page C1. When Molly and I lived in the Tampa area in the mid-1950s, the papers regularly reported vicious crimes in Ybor City. Is there a need for teaching ethics in that section of Florida? If the Ten Commandments were allowed in the schools of Ybor City, might some student be tempted to read the ones that say, Thou shalt not kill? Is it possible that teaching students not to kill might reduce killing across our nation? If the ACLU cares about such matters, they have not given much evidence of it. Since I have just mentioned the American Civil Liberties Union, I need to review an article about the ACLU in the Tennessean, December the 30th, 2004. The state of Tennessee is attempting to crack down on tin care fraud. The state has mailed out 12,500 letters to tin care users who appear to have underreported their income or whose patterns of prescription drug use appear suspicious. The ACLU accuses the state of casting too wide a net. Page B1. Does the ACLU not care if people are defrauding the state? It has been my observation for many years that the members of the ACLU have never been taught ethics or the teaching had no effect. Why is the ACLU almost always wrong on every issue? Why does it stick its collective nose in areas where it has no business? The organization should be designated the Un-American, Uncivil, Anti-Liberties Union. The business section of the newspaper published an article entitled, Health South Settles Fraud Charges for $325 Million. The United States government charged Hell South of Birmingham, Alabama, with defrauding Medicare and other government health programs of millions and millions of dollars. Hell South's fraud on Medicare was driven both by long-standing business practices in its outpatient therapy business and improprieties in its outpatient rehabilitation business, according to Assistant Attorney General Peter Keisler, head of the Justice Department's Civil Division. Page E1. What an absolute disgrace that healthcare professionals would have the ethical values of hardened criminals. What kind of example do big corporations like Health South set for the young people of our great nation? The Tennessee Highway Patrol has reported that drinkers killed 447 people on Tennessee highways in 2003. I have several questions I must ask before our time expires. What have parents and preachers been telling young people and older people about the dangers of drinking and driving? Have they told them that alcohol goes to the brains of the drinker and almost immediately affects the person's ability to make decisions, especially under pressure, such as driving on crowded streets and highways? Have they told them that drinking adversely affects the liver, the heart, the brain, and other organs and systems of the body? Are preachers afraid to discuss the dangers of beverage alcohol because some of their members drink or own places of business that sell alcohol? Did you know that some elders have forbidden their preachers to speak out against the foolishness of drinking and driving? The city of Nashville and other cities throughout the United States provide rides home for those who drink too much on New Year's Eve or on other occasions. Have drinkers no self-control? What kind of example are parents and other adults setting for our children and young people when they cannot or will not control their drinking? And yet older people who drink, including some parents, have the audacity to criticize our young people for using marijuana or other illegal drugs. My friends, we thank you for listening. May God continue to bless and keep you.